What has come to light in the scheduled Eskom power failures? Proverbs 4 verse 19 declares, the way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. Well, in our country we know it as Eskom, the powers of darkness. What is load shedding? It's difficult to explain. It's complicated. So what's the difference between Salatka and the Titanic? When the Titanic went down, the lights were on. What did Salatka use before electricity? What did Salatka use before candles? Electricity. AMC can't stand for another night with candles. Now, you heard of AC and DC, alternative current, direct current. Well, AMC is absolutely no current. Eskom's debt burden amounts to approximately 400 billion rand, that's billion with a B, which is passed over to the taxpayer. To quote from a report by Freedom Front Plus in Parliament, government is wholly to blame for allowing the utilities debt to get so out of hand and the company collapse under corruption and incompetence, largely brought on by Black Economic Empowerment, BEBEE, Affirmative Action. The budget deficits have shot up to 284 billion. Government expenditures increased to 2.24 trillion. Government debts grown to 5 trillion, or 75% of our GDP is owed in debt. The financing cost of debt rose to 340 billion, or 5% of the GDP is just servicing the debt. Another 700 billion rand is earmarked for salaries. The government's wage bill is one of the highest amongst the world's developing countries. Expressed as a percentage of the GDP, it's 31% of our GDP. It's higher than the average of the 38 member countries of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD. And so all sorts of cartoons are coming up, which in many ways, many a true thing is said in jest. So the government is towing Eskom and the taxpayers carrying the government. So, yeah. Chin up, we only want you to do this for another 3 years. And then relax, folks, they found the fault. Eskom, it's apartheid to blame. How's that for an original solution? Will the last acting CEO please turn off the lights? In the event of load shedding, this will not be necessary. And people posting things like this, hanging a candle under the shower pipe to try and get some hot water. Will you marry me? It depends. Do you have a generator and how many kilowatts is it? And then, improvising during power. Now this also isn't much of a joke. It's correct. Upper and middle classes, income, full tariff, big business industry, discounted tariff. Neighboring countries like Zimbabwe and Namibia and Botswana, secret terms and tariffs. We don't know how much they pay, if anything. It's all secret. But the poor and marginalized will tough. You're disconnected. And that is true. Why does big business and industry get such big discounts and the main hardworking taxpayers are the ones who pay most of the price? Eskom stage 4. No, this is not the fourth industrial revolution we had in mind. Forget about artificial intelligence. It's like no intelligence. There will be no load shedding this winter. Remember that? They were telling us this last year. So as the newspaper here says, what's so funny? Is the economy is Eskom and candlelit crime? Government's got a lot to laugh about, but this is kind of meaningful. When in the middle of a power failure, you've got an Eskom advert, use electricity wisely. Hard to do that when you don't have any. So load shedding is the only thing that South Africa under the ANC actually delivers on time. And so you have to really admire any business that's make a going concern, like poor response. They've got their own generators, they have to have all sorts of backups in order to be able to keep going, keep customers and attract people in there. No problem because they manage to still have light, TV and Wi-Fi, even if there's no power. Meanwhile, at the Eskom offices, they're also using generators. That's pretty sad. And when Eskom says, we don't always supply you with electricity, but when we do, please don't use it. I mean, how many suppliers don't want you to use their product? Now, how to improvise when you have no electricity? But government goes one better. Sometimes they get rid of the need for needing to cut the grass. So this is how advanced you can get. You no longer have any lawn to trim. There's all kinds of scandals coming out about Eskom, and the scandals just never end. And the outgoing CEO of Eskom, De Ruyter, has spilled the beans and become a bit of a whistleblower, and there's no reason why not to, because in Parliament they accused him of treason, and they didn't back him up, even though he's really been working around the clock to try and keep the lights on. In fact, De Ruyter gets the blame for what's been going on, even though he inherited a problem that was already a disaster. But he's blamed, seriously, that he stopped paying the bribes, which were essential to keep the power stations going. And by stopping the bribes, he increased the power failures. Now, how does that sound? So, according to De Ruyter, Eskom is losing 1 billion rand every month to corruption and theft. That's not counting. In fact, according to Business Day, every day that we have level 6 power failures, we're losing 1 billion rand in lost revenue. He said an unnamed senior member of the ANC who's currently sitting in Parliament is deeply involved in the corruption and theft at Eskom. Be nice if he named the person, but we can make a few guesses. At least 4 organized crime networks are operating in Mpumalanga province, feeding off Eskom. These crime networks have developed mafia-like characteristics, calling one another soldiers, and these are real criminal cabals. The police have been sent to investigate his poisoning when he was poisoned, were so inept they confused the dose of cyanide with a sinus complaint. He was told by a minister in government that, yes, it's inevitable that a portion of the $8.5 billion from COP26 fund, which is to move us to green energy, a portion of that will be stolen, but that's just inevitable and we meant to take that as acceptable. He was asked in an interview, do you think Eskom is a feeding trough for the ANC? And he said, that's what the evidence suggests. It's a very polite answer. He pointed out that these massive, extremely expensive power stations that were built with design flaws and were billions and billions and billions of dollars over budget and late and inefficient, and they're breaking down regularly, they're not well designed. And it was tender problems. They were basically the contracts to build them were given to powers of the government, lots of kickbacks. And billions gets lost just building these new stations which aren't able to be as efficient as many of our older, smaller stations. So what we're learning is very disturbing. The ANC government's wage bill is a serious problem. The public sector is far too large and far too expensive. It's out of control and unsustainable. All luxury should be cut from the budget. The department should not be given any more money to squander. You know, when money is being wasted and going down the drain, it's not wise to shovel more in, but that's what they're doing. Everything the ANC government is running is failing. Railways, Southern Airways, Post Office, and as you know, Eskom. In fact, since 1994, it's been a consistent pattern of state-operated enterprises are corrupt and inefficient, and they fail. And they just seem to be looting sprees, jobs for cadres, and basically everything the ANC has run since 1994, they've run into the ground. So in any report card, they should get a fail. And yet, incredibly, people have voted not just once, but twice, 3 times, 4 times, 5 times, 6 times. And there's probably people willing to vote for them 7th or 8th time. And yet, what have they ever done for their supporters? They've done a lot for their members, who they give opportunities for theft and looting to. Does this picture not tell you a lot? The foundation of every state is the education of its youth. So just look at the kind of education they're giving in the schools. The Bible gets kicked out, prayer gets kicked out, in comes evolutionism, LGBTQ, gay agenda, transgenderism, you name every kind of situation, every garbage. Amongst the assignments in English in the Gauteng classes has been plan a bank robbery, choose a getaway vehicle, what's up, weapons, so on, so on. You know, we need more bank robberies, so that's an assignment. Another assignment, what animal would you like to shapeshift into? Make up a curse to put on someone you don't like. And what would be in the recipe and so on. And so they're encouraging witchcraft, trying to get people to read Harry Potter, come up with their own incantations, curses. And yeah, when you look at some of these youth, you kind of wonder what a good job education department's done. But who's been the Minister of Education in the country for most of the recent years? The head of the Southern Communist Party, General Secretary of the Southern Communist Party, has played Nzimani, Minister of Higher Education. You wonder why education is such a mess. So books have come out such as License to Loot, How the Plunder of Eskom and Other Parastatals Almost Sank South Africa. They could probably take almost out. Notice that the middle letters of cancer is ANC. A cancer is a cell that doesn't contribute to the health of the body, but breaks down the health of the body. So the ANC is a literal cancer on the economics and the morals of the country, because instead of building up the country, they break it down. What is the difference between the mafia and the government? The mafia turns a profit. So corruption is a major, major problem in the country. Yet the South African National Defence Force, who couldn't find 26 million rand to fix their computers, the computers that run the whole SANDF were overheating, and they needed another 26 million rand to overhaul the computer system. They couldn't find 26 million for the computer system, but they found 220 million for a parade in Richards Bay, where the generals stayed in five-star accommodation, and the soldiers were in leaky tents that were broken and flapping around the wind, torn tents. Now, of our 11 Roy Clark attack helicopters, only 4 are serviceable at this time. Roy Clark's one of the finest attack helicopters in the world, but only 4 operational. It's worse with our jets. Only 2 frontline fighter jets, 2 Gripens out of 26 are operational. So we've got literally 24 Gripen fighter jets sitting in a workshop or propped up on boxes or whatever they do. And these Gripen jets cost billions and billions of rand, but instead of maintaining these jets, they're letting them rust and rot. SANDF is top-heavy with generals. According to a parliamentary research report, we have over 400 generals in the South National Defence Force. That's one general for every 184 individuals in the SANDF. Now, when I was in the military, 200 men would be led by a captain. So we've got 400 generals doing what a captain could do. But generals get paid a lot more and a lot more fringe benefits and so on. So 400 generals. I don't know if Russia's got that many generals. And they've got a lot of medals too, and I'm not sure what for. So they could throw 220 million on a party. And we've got all these generals who are going to be walking around, falling over to the left because of all the heavy medals that I'm not too sure what on earth they've achieved. The only medals that are worth anything are valor under fire. Valor in combat are real medals, like the Norris Crooks. These other things are thank you for turning up and participating kind of medals, which don't mean that much. At the moment, the South African Navy has only one operational warship, and that's the frigate SAS Mendi. So when the Russian and Chinese come here for joint exercises, we can only turn up one other vessel. Not a submarine works, just one frigate, that's it. No Christian to ever support broad-based black economic empowerment affirmative action. It's nothing but racism. Race quotas and The Bible is clear in Numbers 15:15. You should have one law for the citizen and the alien in your midst, and you to do to others you want to be done unto. One common law. When you've got different laws and different criteria for different races, that's so anti-biblical and against the common law. Corruption is the biggest problem in this country right now, corruption and greed. So what's our response? 2 Peter 2:19 says, while they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. You can write 2 Peter 2:19 over the entire NC operations in Eskom. They promise liberty, but they're slaves of corruption, literally. The African Union calculates that every year over $148 billion is stolen from Africa by its leaders. They work this out to more than a quarter of the continent's entire gross domestic product is lost to corruption every single year. Corruption in Africa is endemic and it's pervasive. Here's the corruption index. The darker the color, the more corrupt the country. So isn't it interesting, the two most corrupt countries on this map, Afghanistan and Somalia. What did they have in common? America went into both countries, poured in vast amount of aid. It's been pointed out, like what they're doing in Ukraine, the more America gets involved in the country, the more corrupt the country becomes. Because when there's hundreds of billions of dollars flowing into a country, it just feeds greed, and what happens? You get all kinds of corruption, and they make the place more corrupt than it was before. And that's why Ukraine is the most corrupt country in Europe right now. It's a client state of the United States. They did it to Afghanistan, did it to Somalia, and they'll do it to any country that they can get their paws on. But by the way, in Africa, the least corrupt country in Africa, can anyone guess? Botswana. Interestingly, somehow or another, Botswana has escaped the corruption that's destroyed most of the countries around them. Zimbabwe is one of the darkest there too. But just interesting that Afghanistan and Somalia just jumped out of me. The World Bank reports 40% of Africa's private wealth is held offshore. So Africans don't even want to invest in Africa. Global Financial Integrity calculates Africa's lost over $900 billion since 1970. Just exported out one way or the other. That's far in excess of the total development assistance given to Africa during the same time. Western aid has poured over $300 billion into Africa in the same time period. So three times more than the West put into Africa, Africa's sent outside. Swiss bank accounts or whatever. Most states are effectively bankrupt, weighed down by debt, and failing to even provide basic minimum services like ambulances and electricity. Most African countries today have a lower per capita income than they had at independence, or should we say, under colonialism, they were better off. You just take in Rhodesia, nobody starved in Rhodesia ever, even during a drought. And now, without drought, they can be an absolute poverty-stricken, starved, unemployed, through the roof. Rhodesia had the lowest unemployment in Africa, now Zimbabwe's got the highest. Nahu Rabadu, the former head of Nigeria's Anti-Corruption Commission, declared that the best way to attack poverty is to attack corruption. The prerequisite to all efficient, effective government is the eradication of corruption. Corruption prevents any country from realizing its potential. Corruption steals from absolutely everyone. Well, Zuma famously said that corruption is a victimless crime. Nobody gets hurt. Well, that's a very ignorant statement because it's exactly not true. It's calculated that every one of us pays at least 20% more for all goods and services because of the cost of corruption. Corruption discourages investment in the first place. It retards development. It increases costs to the consumer. Robert Guest, the African editor of The Economist, observed in The Shackled Continent, which is a must-read book, absolutely staggering, very intriguing, very revealing and disturbing. For half a century now, Africa has been deluged with aid, but this aid has failed to make Africans any less poor. The aid has bankrolled tyrants or idealists with hopeless economic policies. Both types of aid have been wasted. Just look at the piles of textbooks here. These are textbooks found at a dump site near Polokwane in Limpopo, June 2012. Many of these textbooks still in the Oxford University Press coverings, hadn't even opened the plastic yet. Just dumped. Never delivered to the schools. Doing business in Africa can be tricky, wrote Guest. Bad roads punctuated by roadblocks, manned by bribe-hungry policemen, make it slow and costly to move goods, even short distances. We know because we had to move a container of medicines from Kenya through Uganda into South Sudan, not a far distance, but took multiplied months, vast amounts of bribes or incentives and customs duties and all kinds of import fees and so on, to take three medicines to give free. So by the time it got to Sudan, most of the medicines had expired, and the people in Sudan were threatening to charge our people on our mission because some of the medicines were expired, which is entirely due to the long and complicated, expensive process of trying to move goods even a short distance. Local firms, meanwhile, have been held back by arbitrary government regularities, dysfunctional legal systems, and the difficulty for those without political connections of raising capital. If Africa was better governed, it would be richer. And that's the editor of The Economist, his considered conclusion. Guest conclusion, Africans are poor largely because they're not yet free. They live under predatory, incompetent governments which impoverish them in many ways. Through corruption, through bad economic policies, and sometimes, as in Zimbabwe, by creating an atmosphere of terror. Mugabe in Zimbabwe is well portrayed by this picture of his police wearing battle gear, helmets, carrying AK-47s, and whipping people who had in Jameson Avenue, what now is called Samora Machel Avenue, and they'd been marching for peace, marching against corruption, and the police are whipping them as they've got their boots on their neck on the sidewalk in Samora Machel Avenue, the main avenue. And this policeman looks like he's about to kick that man in the face. Whipping women outside a government building in Harare because they're praying. And then the blood diamonds, that's something else. They found massive amounts of diamonds in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe's marine diamond fields actually had something like a quarter of the world's diamond production at that time. None of it went to the people of Zimbabwe at all. The Chinese sent Antonov 126s who landed near Marang in southeastern Zimbabwe, and they took off straight from there, didn't go through Harare, didn't go through customs, flew the diamonds straight from there to China. And China got a lot. Mugabe and ZANU-PF got money, stadiums, airport terminal, tanks and aircraft, weapons. But the people of Zimbabwe got nothing. In fact, many of the Zimbabweans were made like slaves and whipped and beaten to mine the diamonds. And others who tried to prospect on their own were machine gunned by presidential guards of Mugabe, who even used helicopter gunships to come and fire machine cannon into the camps of people who were prospecting. So when you speak about blood diamonds, you'd think Zimbabwe would qualify. But no, not according to Kimberley. According to De Beers at Kimberley, a blood diamond by definition is by a guerrilla group, not a government. Now Zimbabwe is run by a government recognized as the United Nations. So by definition, diamonds produced in Zimbabwe, even if you and I would think they're blood diamonds, according to the Kimberley Accord, they're not blood diamonds. A Zimbabwe diamond is conflict-free. It's a government that's recognized with the UN. They might be beating up, machine gunning, whipping, torturing, chopping off hands and so on of prospectors in the country, but that's not a blood diamond. That can be sold in your local pharmacy, your local jewelry store, no problem. Now, to show you what socialism can do for a country, Zimbabwe's land reform. On the left, you see the evil colonial farmhouse. On the right, you see a liberated land reform result. And as you can see, the government can make everything better. And Zimbabwe, on the left, the evil past. On the right, the wonderful socialist present. And Over 5,000 farms in Zimbabwe that used to produce most of the food, exports, foreign affairs, provide most of the employment in the country, biggest employers, now crushed, and many of these farms hand over to cabinet ministers, ZANU-PF leaders, or Mugabe's wife, and so on. Yeah, again and again you can see there's nothing socialism cannot break. It was well said, socialism could only work in heaven where they don't need it, or in hell where they already have it. Winston Churchill said, socialism is a philosophy of failure, the creed of ignorance, the gospel of envy. Its inherent virtue is the equalizing of misery. Which is a good quote. Of course, why did he hand over most of Eastern Europe into the hands of Joseph Stalin? Good question, but he made better speeches than policies. Under Nahu Rabadu, Nigeria's Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, they secured 250 convictions, recovered over $5 billion of stolen public funds. So it is possible to fight corruption, if there's a will to. The president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, advocates trade, not aid. Africa does not need aid, Africa needs fair trade. He's convinced it's essential for Africa to end its dependency on foreign aid. Foreign aid fuels corruption, he said, which is undeniably true. All foreign aid fuels corruption. Corruption is the second most prevalent crime in Africa. Leaders need to become more accountable to the taxpayers. More auditors are needed. But you can't be accountable to the taxpayer for freebies being given to you by foreign governments or foreign corporations like World Health Organization, International Monetary Funds, in the case of the $500 billion given for COVID relief when the lockdowns began. Remember, Ramaphosa promising $500 billion to be distributed to companies that are going to be suffering because their business has been closed down. Any of you receive any of that money? I doubt it. I know many businesses that were bankrupted who got nothing. And after a while, Ramaphosa was, sorry, it's all gone. Couldn't explain where it went to, but we can guess. Anti-corruption reforms are essential. Leaders steal 7 times more than the total value of all foreign aid that's been poured into Africa every year. So, it's far more valuable to end corruption than to receive foreign aid. Corruption steals 7 times more than all foreign aid. End endemic corruption, which is looting the resources of this great continent. Africa should be one of the richest continents in the world. Just Ethiopia could feed the whole of Africa. Could be the breadbasket of Africa. Just the Congo River could provide enough electricity from hydroelectric plants to fuel all electrical needs and potential of the whole of Africa. We've got all the cobalt, we've got everything from manganese, platinum, you name it. Africa's got every kind of mineral, agricultural potential richness. We've got the best animals on the planet, the fastest, the tallest, the biggest. Why should Africa need any foreign aid? Every week our newspapers are washed with scandals about elected officials, public servants, extravagant lifestyles, outrageous expenditures, like massive amounts of caviar and champagne at events. Not only that, but we've had cabinet ministers who stayed in the most expensive hotel in town down at the waterfront. Their entire family and staff being put up in five-star accommodation while they do house renovations. Things like that. And then you've got government departments. They've got the whole of Parliament and all sorts of buildings in town. But whenever they've got a hearing, and I've been to many of these hearings, it's often held in hotels. Why are they held in hotels? Does the government not have its own buildings? Does it not have their own catering services? But no. They've got to continually, over and over, find some kind of excuse for outside catering. Do you know that the army now, instead of doing its own everything, brings in outside contractors for almost everything in the army, from catering through to fixing vehicles? They used to have an internal capacity, and now they need to farm it all out to relatives, of course. Despite the state raking more than $600 billion in taxes every year, they continually run at a deficit, and I don't know how. So they don't give anything away free. I don't know if anyone's been given free tickets by SAA, for example, but Some are, they run hundreds of millions in the red, and yet they get subsidized, and they're charged for their services too. How does SABC run at a deficit? They not only have advertisers, but they get paid licenses. Taxpayers wonder, where's all this money going? Over 600 billion rand a year. So many schools without textbooks, so many children taught in open air, no classrooms. Hospitals short of medicines, hospital patients going hungry because the provincial government has paid the service providers who now are stopping the catering. The Auditor General of SANFA reported over 20 billion rand in unauthorised spending just in one fiscal year. Only three of the 39 government departments had clean audits, which means the others were seriously deficient. The Special Investigating Units of the Police reports that at least 30 billion rand was lost to government corruption in just one year. Now, if you and I stole something, that would be very serious. But the government can steal billions, and some another you mentioned, forget about it. The finances of five provinces have gone in severe disarray, to quote them. By the way, the education department admits that 95% of their schools are dysfunctional. And yet they've got the audacity to send inspectors to homeschools. And when I, the homeschooler inspector, turn up at our home, I ask them if there were any government departments, government schools that had as good a library as we had, and things like that. He said, no, in fact, he didn't know any government school that would meet the criteria that they are mentioned forced on us as a homeschooling family. And I said, so what happens when you investigate them? He says, we're not allowed to visit or investigate or inspect government schools. We're only allowed to inspect private schools and homeschoolers. In fact, most government inspectors send their children to private schools. That should tell you something right there. The worst province in the country is Limpopo, the northernmost province on the border of Zimbabwe. This is the EFF's stronghold. This is the Everything for Free Party's stronghold. And they live way beyond their means. Peace, unity and prosperity is the crest of Limpopo, but they run by a mafia, at the top of which is Mathali and, of course, Julius Malema. And they have got political czars, foot soldiers, and money men who get the tenders, and corrupt, as in vast amounts of accusations, scandals, all kinds of looting that's been done from the Premier all the way through. And the Communist Party and the ANC duped the local people to get votes, said to residents. ANC ward councillors urged them to invade municipal land in return for their votes. And here they explain how the corruption works, all the way down to the money spent by governments on social grants in one year was 97 billion, but the money lost to corruption over 100 billion. So people think corruption doesn't hurt anyone. Well, consider this. At one time, I think this is 2014, they looked at 675 billion had been lost to corruption already. Now, what could you do with 675 billion rand? Well, for example, saying 50 billion would host 10 World Cup soccers. 25 billion would build 1,000 schools. 216 billion would build 4 million homes. 375 billion would build 10 new hospitals in London for 18 years. So, just think in terms of lost opportunities and lost services. With over 2 billion overspent, the Limpopo government was not able to pay doctors, nurses, teachers, social workers halfway through the year, and other public sector employees, because they had stolen the entire budget already before the year was half done. Restore the rule of law, indeed. Thomas Sowell, an American commentator, says, if you have always believed that everyone should play by the same rules and be judged by the same standards, that's what got me labelled as a radical 60 years ago, a liberal 30 years ago, and a racist today. Yeah, if you believe people should all be judged by the same standards, that makes you a racist now. Funny how things change. I remember when liberals all believed in no censorship. You should have complete freedom of speech. Now that's when pornography was banned and blasphemy was banned. Now pornography and blasphemy is unbanned. Now they want to ban what they call hate speech, which could be something as simple as there's only two genders, or Jesus is the way, the truth, and life. No one comes to the Father except by Him. That could be now construed as hate speech. In Britain, people have been arrested for praying on the other side of the street from an abortion clinic, praying silently. Police came up. Are you praying? Yes. What are you praying about? Does it matter? Yes, it does. You're in a no-pray zone. A no-pray zone? Yes. You're on the other side of the street from the abortion clinic. Were you praying about the abortion clinic? Does it matter? Yes. Anyway, they end up arresting her. A lady praying silently on the other side of the street, not holding a banner, a poster or anything. They locked up a pastor in Canada recently for just questioning a drag queen hour at the local library. And he was there and they assaulted him, didn't arrest the people who assaulted him, arrested the man for public mischief and whatever that means. Came to his home the next day, handcuffed him, took him away, police vehicle, for protesting verbally at a drag queen hour for children in the library. Corruption Perceptions Index. Interestingly, Somalia is right at the bottom, the most corrupt country in Africa. At the top is Botswana, the least corrupt country in Africa, they say. Interesting. But where's South Africa? There's South Africa. We're number 65 on the Transparency Index. Every year, over 10% of people in the whole world are forced to pay a bribe. Now, to try and understand the amount of money we're talking about. Okay, I'm sorry this is in dollars, but we have a 100 rand bill too, so imagine there's 100 rand. Okay, you put 1,000 of them together, here you've got 10,000 rand. You can fit this in a pocket. Here's 1,000,000 rand. You could fit it in a bag, shopping bag. Here's a pallet. Now this pallet is 100 million can fit in a pallet. Now pallet is about a ton. Here's 1,000,000,000, 10 pallets. 1 billion rand. 100. Now, 100 trillion, it's a football field size. There's the size of a pen. Technically, there's a pallet, there's one person, but notice these are double stacked pallets. Each pallet's about a ton, but this is now 2 tons as double stacked. So, 1,000,000,000 rand would be the size of a football field or the dimensions of a 747 jumbo jet. Now, bear in mind, our government has already in debt to over 5 trillion, and their budget for this next year is only 2.3 trillion. That's a lot more of that. Now, there's all kinds of other scandals too. Former President of Cricket SA engulfed in corruption crisis, arms deal continues to make headlines, along with the Travelgate abuse of public finances by members of parliament. It seems every head of police we've had has turned out to be a criminal involved with the gangsters. So putting a police uniform on a criminal doesn't make him obey the law somehow, for some strange reason. And there's been no end of corruption, even with traffic police. So statistics for last year, I've got this from Parliament just last week. A total of 27,000 people were murdered in South Africa last year. That's 2,256 people murdered every month, or 79 people murdered every day on average. Murder, 7,555, increase of 10% over the previous year. Sexual offences, 9.6% increase. Attempted murder, 24% increase. Assault with intent to cause grievous bodily harm, 8% increase. Assault, 12% increase. Robbery, 21% increase. Armed robbery, 10%. Average increase, 11%. All kinds of crimes increased. Truck trackings increased 9.8%. Now, comparing it to last year is a bit pointless, because last year was quite bad too. Comparing it to 30 years ago, that's more meaningful. So we did a study somewhere around the year 2002, compared it with crime back in 1982, and we found that murders had increased thousands of percent, and thefts and so on too. So it was just unbelievable. You could have, in all of South Africa back in 1960s, you might get 60 people murdered in a whole year. And then under Mandela, it increased to about 20,000 people being murdered every year. Now that could have something to do with abolishing the death penalty for murder and all the violent videos and taking the Bible and prayer out of schools and all the rest of it. But corruption and crime is definitely part of it. The failure of the criminal justice system encourages criminals to increase. So examples of unscrupulous politicians squandering taxpayers' money with impunity, stealing from the poor in the name of uplifting the poor is endemic. If the provinces were commercial enterprises, they would have been declared insolvent and liquidated to settle their debts. All too many politicians seem to view positions in government as an opportunity to enrich themselves at the public expense. They should be given the red card to leave the field for corruption. The toxic mixture of politics, business and greed is sabotaging development, costing jobs, eroding the economy. So BBBEE affirmative action is a nice cover for colossal corruption, enriching themselves and their cronies by giving tenders and jobs to their chosen people. Here's a book that came out a while ago, The Enemy Within, How the ANC Lost the Battle Against Corruption. And the picture is of a wolf in sheep's clothing, but I suggest it's a wolf in wolf's clothing, and that's an insult to the wolves. I don't think they ever were sheep. They're always wolves. ANC didn't lose the battle against corruption, they led the battle for corruption. The ANC, we lie, we steal, we cheat, but you stupid, you will vote for us again. What is the difference between organized crime and the government? Organized crime is organized. And corruption is not just a problem for the world. Patrick Johnson of Operation World, and he's a friend, and he's been at this mission house on a number of occasions. He's a board member of Frontline Fellowship. Patrick Johnson, the world's top statistician and missiologist in the world today, he reports in his Future of the Global Church that $390 billion was given to Christian causes worldwide, but of that, $25 billion were embezzled in 1 year. So embezzlement is even in the church, it's even in ministries and missions, Christian aid agencies, we're not exempt. Up to 20% of global gross domestic product, or GDP, is spent on bribery. Over $1 trillion a year is spent on bribes. Up to 50% of all aid to developing countries is stolen before it can reach its intended recipients. Now, I know a lot of this is true. There's other ministries that we have worked alongside, having to pay bribes to get their visas, to get across the border, to get their vehicle across the border, to get the aid truck or container across the border, to get the medicines delivered to the hospital, to get the official to sign off whatever they needed for this vehicle or whatever it is. And there's many ministries where paying bribes is considered an essential way of work. You can't work in, for example, Sudan without paying bribes. And so I know ministries where it's on the budget, the bribes you have to pay. I don't know what they call it, but it is bribes. You've got to pay this to some official to get this approved. And many people have found you're not going to get your driver's license if you don't pay a bribe and things like that. So this affects people across the board. Up to half of all the aid to developing countries is stolen before it can reach the intended recipients. So an example, 1970s, you'll all remember Ethiopia, people rocking against the famine, banned aid, people starving in Ethiopia, lots of starving Ethiopian jokes, what's the world's shortest cookbook, Ethiopian cookbook and things like this. But during this time, as people were pouring a fortune to Ethiopia, Ethiopia was run by a communist government which had burned crops and forced relocated vast amounts of millions of people into the desert where they could starve because they weren't listening to Commissar. And I sat opposite a Mercedes-Benz official at a supper in Germany and looking for some conversation point, talking about he had been in Africa before. Where had he been? Ethiopia. What were you doing there? Meeting with the government. Why? Well, because the government of Ethiopia insists that any country that wanted to give free relief aid to Ethiopia for the victims of the government's policies, mind you, had to provide new Daimler-Benz trucks, Mercedes-Benz trucks, to deliver the relief aid to the people. And they had to pay 100% import tax on the truck coming into the country to deliver the free aid to the people who were starving because of government policies. And they had to sign over the ownership of the trucks to the Ethiopian government. And not only that, but they were often transporting weaponry instead of the food. So, in speaking to this Mercedes-Benz official, found out, so what were you doing in Ethiopia? He said, well, they were trying to get us to refund them when their trucks have broken down. I said, what do you say? I said, well, if they persisted in this, I would make known to the world what they were doing. He said, what are they doing? He said, they were transporting T-62 tanks on the back of the trucks, which our Pentechnicans were not designed for, and they're meant to be delivering grain to people who are starving, and they're delivering T-62 tanks to the Cuban forces who are burning villages and killing people in the Ogaden Desert. I said, are they doing that? Yes, they are. Why don't you make it known? Well, he says, we're selling a lot of trucks to Ethiopia. Now, just think about that for a moment, the implications. Instead of the food aid getting to people, there are many times transporting the very equipment that's destroying the crops, the villages, and the lives that we're meant to be saving. And so what's happening to food? It's either rotting on a dockside or being exported to Cuba or to Eastern Europe to pay for more weapons coming into the country. So the Ethiopian famine was one big colossal cover for massive corruption on a colossal scale. More than half of all aid doesn't reach the intended recipients because of government corruption in between. And that, I know, is true. I mean, just think, you've got to pay 100% import duty on the free relief aid or medicines you bring in, and on the trucks you bring in to try and distribute, and so on and so forth. Just keep adding this up. You can see that communist governments must have a minister of famine. Like, this is the best industry we've got. This brings in more aid than we could ever imagine. Make sure you keep lots of people starving. Make sure there's lots of pictures of starving people in our country as our main export, because that will then guarantee all sorts of things come in. That's literally what was happening. Worldwide, an estimated $400 billion is lost to corruption every single year. $400 billion. I mean, just think how much money we're talking about. Just think of like the football field or pallets of $100 bills. But possibly the greatest corruption theft in history was perpetrated by the banksters, who triggered the Great Recession of 2008 through unethical speculation and selling of worthless derivatives. If you haven't seen this film, it's well worth seeing. It's absolutely staggering. Inside Job, it's a documentary type film where you meet with the ministers of finance of Iceland and Singapore and all over the world explaining what happened. Now, in Iceland, they arrested all the bankers and the government and put them in jail. That's the only country where justice rang out that I could tell in 2008. The other countries, like America, elected Obama, and Obama had the most Wall Street-dominated governments in American history. All the people who had just stolen billions from the population of America got major cushy positions under Obama. Barack Hussein Obama was the most Wall Street-dominated government in American history. And as I said, the film that cost $20 trillion to make, they destroyed the lives of tens of billions, tens of millions of people worldwide, stole their savings, stole their jobs, stole their homes, and it was through these banks selling worthless derivatives. And what did Obama do? He paid out the banks, not the people who had lost everything, so that the bank executives that caused this could walk away with hundreds of millions or even billions in personal wealth and assets. So the people who caused the economic crash were bailed out by the taxpayer, So they get all the benefits, but none of the risks. The taxpayer pays the risks, but the bankers walked away with personal benefits and wealth unimaginable by all of us. They rewarded the criminals and, well, except Nason. Nason, they locked them all up. So inside job is quite an expose. You'll never trust the banks again. I used to think that people rob banks were bad. Now I think the people run the banks are worse. And to just look at these financial institutions, Goldman Sachs, absolute criminal enterprise. And these are the criminals who stole the savings of millions of people, tens of millions of people, cost them their homes, destroyed all sorts of things. The US Treasury is then put under Goldman Sachs. By the way, Britain is now run by a Prime Minister who used to work for Goldman Sachs. And then there's Morgan Stanley, another one of these banking enterprises that were selling worthless derivatives by the billions and imploded the economy. And yeah, the banksters. The cost to US economy of the 2008 economic crash was over 135% of the GDP. So America lost 135% of what they were worth. United Kingdom lost 149% of its total GDP. That's 1.5 times the total worth of their country. The only people who benefited from the depression caused by the irresponsible speculative bubble were the banksters themselves and the politicians, of course, who served them. Proverbs 11 verse 1 says, "The Lord abhors dishonest scales, but accurate weights are his delight." So, to give you an example of our theft by inflation books, and surveys done in South Africa by the Old Mutual, and I remember this in particular. I worked for Old Mutual when I left school. My first job was with Old Mutual. I remember this particular survey. In 1971, you could buy a car for about R1,000. I remember my father did buy a car for R1,000 in 1971. 1981, the same amount of money cost could buy a bicycle, motorbike. I bought my first motorbike for about R1,000 in 1981. As I came out the army, drove it straight out the shop floor, Honda 250 XL off-road motorbike, and drove it straight from Kempston Park down to Durban, then down to East London, and then Port Elizabeth, then to Cape Town, and then back all the way to Mozambique. By 2001, 1,000 rand could buy you a bicycle, and I bought a whole lot of bicycles in 2001 for Sudan, and they cost about 1,000 rand each. Now, a good pair of running shoes could cost you over 2,000 rand. So we've gone from a car to a motorbike to a bicycle to pairs of shoes for the same amount of money.
One shoe.
That's true. So, in the good old days, 1974, you could fill up your car's petrol tank for 5 rand. Now, 100 rand won't even get your needle out of the empty. Now, I remember 5 rand filled up my motorbike in 1981, but could fill up your car in 1974. Skimping in the measure, boosting the price, cheating with dishonest scales, I'll never forgive, says the Lord. Amos 8, verse 5 to 7. Now, the devastating impact of unbacked currency, inflation on pensions and savings is absolutely criminal. These are all worth the same thing. 100 rand notes, a $1 bill, a $100 trillion note in Zimbabwe, they're all worth about the same thing. Now, Stephen Mitford Goodson pointed out that it's not that prices go up. He says, in fact, the price of everything stayed pretty constant. In the Roman Empire, about 5 BC, you could have bought a Roman toga and a leather belt and sandals for about 1 gold coin. He says, today if you want to buy a suit and shoes and belt, tie, it'll cost you about 1 gold coin too. The price has not changed, but the currency's been debased. So the price of things stays pretty constant in terms of how many man hours, how many weeks, months, wages and so on. But the currency gets debased. The rand used to be one of the strongest currencies in the world. When I went to Germany the first time, my rand was stronger than the German D-mark. My rand was stronger than the British pound, so stronger than the American dollar. I remember that I could get 2 US dollars for 1 rand. The fact that now it takes 20 rand to buy a dollar, it just shows not that the dollar's got stronger, but that the rand's got weaker. Now, how do you like this? 1,072,418,000,000 and $2 million only. Sounds like a speech by Zuma, doesn't it? This week's special in Zimbabwe, no fuel. In fact, the economy is being overloaded like this bucky. It just can't continue. And here's the latest thing in ambulances in Zimbabwe. The new Toyota Corolla. You have to get innovative to transport things in Africa. The one independent daily news in Zimbabwe blown up while the police stood nearby laughing. Biblical law requires that we use honest scales and honest weights, honest money backed by real constant value. Shall I count pure those with wicked balances and with a bag of deceitful weights? For rich men are full of violence. The inhabitants have spoken lies. Their tongue is deceitful in their mouth. Micah 6:11-12. This is the wonderful painting in Lausanne in Switzerland in the Court of Justice. The painting is entitled Justice Lifts the Nations. And you have the people of the city arguing the cases, the sheriff standing with double-handed swords waiting to execute judgment, and the elders of the city looking to Lady Justice, who unblindfolded is holding the scales of justice and the swords pointed down to an open Bible. And so from biblical principles, weigh the evidence, and this justice will lift the nations. And that's a good picture of biblical justice. It's estimated that approximately a third of all business failures every year can be traced to employee theft, what they call shrinkage. While businesses close down, employees lose their jobs and families suffer. But estimate that almost half of all employees are guilty of stealing, what they call in the shops shrinkage. The stock inventory shrinks. I would have called it shoplifting or theft, but that's apparently the term in the industry. Now, obviously, somebody has to pay for the cost of all this theft. So you and I and all the other customers have to share the burden of the billions of rands shoplifted or stolen or embezzled by civil servants. In addition, you have to pay for increased insurance premiums, additional security personnel, additional equipment necessitated by the spending spree. That includes not just security cameras, but now generators, uninterrupted power supplies, batteries, solar panels, and all the bring your own infrastructure because the government's stolen Eskom. It all gets added to the price tag of everything you buy. Don't think anything's free. Somebody's got to pay. It's normally the hard-working, honest citizen who pays for all of this. We also pay for the cost of crime through our taxes, which supports the police force, the legal and judicial system, the prison service, all of which is meant to protect us from the criminal elements of society who now are running the government. Ecclesiastes 8:11 says, why do people commit crimes so readily? Because crime is not punished quickly enough. That's a common sense answer. Corruption is increasing in our society because criminals are not punished swiftly enough. If they dealt swiftly with these criminals, like to the tower, off of his head, you know, that sort of thing, that dealt with things pretty quickly in middle ages in Britain. If a person committed treason, they lost their head on the Tower of Green very quickly, and the ravens were soon feasting on them. That's the end of it. And people didn't want to end up like that, so it put fear in the population. And then Britain had another way of dealing with criminals. The person even just stole. They shipped them off to Australia. And, you know, they called it transportation. And when you export your criminal class, population gets more and more law-abiding. So in Britain, the bobbies could walk around with nothing more than a truncheon because it was a law-abiding population. They could put newspapers on a street corner and put a hat there with change, and people would take change and not steal and pay for things, self-monitoring because it was an honest society. Now, unfortunately, we're importing criminals instead of exporting them and then electing them to be heads of the government. Civil government is called to be a minister of God's justice to punish those who do wrong, we read in 1 Peter 2:14. God has instituted civil government as an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer, Romans 13:4. In case of theft, arson, or malicious damage to property, the Bible decrees restitution. The restoration of what was stolen to the owner. It is reparation for injury or damage to property. The Bible requires that restitution goes entirely to the victim of the crime. Not paying a fine to government, paying restitution to the victim. As Christians, we are called to the high standards of integrity. We are not to fuel the corruption industry by giving in to pressure to pay bribes or award contracts on the basis of political connection. Crime can be combated and corruption can be eradicated if those who claim to be Christians will live according to biblical principles. Now, a friend of mine in Zambia, Lawrence Temfe, worked in a bank, Standard Bank, and over the years he embezzled a lot of money from it. When he was caught, he was sent to prison. He ended up in the Sokka Central Prison, same prison I was locked up in Zambia. And there he was converted to Christ by reading a book, From Prison to Praise. And after serving a sentence in prison, he worked to repay the bank all that he had stolen from it. Now, according to the laws of Zambia, he had done the crime and he had done the time. Nobody is expecting anything more from him. So, Lawrence Temple knew from the scriptures, though, that he was responsible to make full restitution to the victim. So what a testimony when he actually went back to Standard Bank and he repaid them. They didn't expect that. He had done the crime, he had done the time. But now he repaid them as well. Lawrence Temple went on to become head of prison fellowship in Zambia. You can imagine his testimony. People listen to him. I mean, that's extraordinary. We know Uncle George Oof, who stole vast amounts of diamonds from the diamond mines near the Orange River, and he got away with it. No one knew about it, but when he was convicted of a sin, he made full restitution, went back to the diamond mines, and he had to sell his farm, his home, everything he had to pay back. He lost his family as a result. His wife and children were happy to live on the fruits of the ill-gotten gains, but they weren't happy to live without the benefits. So Uncle George also, he did what was necessary to make full restitution, and then the diamond mine declined to prosecute. So he's very fortunate he got away without doing jail time. But the scripture's clear, we have no fellowship with unfruitful works of darkness, but rather to expose them. And restitution is something that's part of repentance. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. As Christians, we're called to love our neighbours as ourselves, to do to others we want to be done unto. So no Christian could be working in government and be involved in corruption. That would be a violation of the very core of their being. Any Christian in civil service must oppose and expose corruption, obviously. We need to live up to the biblical principles of honesty, integrity and courage. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, such as the poor taxpayers being looted. We need to be brave and bold for God. The honor code in many militaries, like the US Air Force, is we will not lie, steal, or cheat, neither will we tolerate amongst ourselves anyone who does. Psalm 94, verse 16 says, who will rise up for me against the wicked? Who will make a stand for me against the workers of iniquity? And we need people who will stand up and expose the corruption endemic in government and government agencies like Eskom and SA. People must know what's going on and who's doing it. We need whistleblowers. We need someone to make a stand. The cost of unstable, inefficient, expensive, unreliable energy is a staggering 89 billion rand per month. Apparently we're losing something like 3 billion rand every day to these so-called load-shedding power failures. Lost production, lost revenue, and wastage. Lots of wastage. Central government South Africa is corrupt. It's complicated, it's frustrating, and it's unnecessarily time-wasting. If you haven't gone to a government department lately, you may not have noticed this, but if you have, you know exactly what you're talking about. Wrong form, wrong queue, the man with the key is not here. Come back, redo it, and so on. The National Assembly of South African Parliament even sent shockwaves around the country by setting in motion a process to change the constitution to allow for theft of land without compensation, expropriation of land without compensation. And that kind of mentality just tells investors, go away, go somewhere else, invest in Singapore. This is not a safe place to invest. And chase away tourists, investors, job creators. The threat to private ownership of property and the clearly stated intention to remove the constitutional safeguards and protections for private ownership has staggered observers. The motion was adopted with a colossal 241 support, only 83 voting against. The ANC and, of course, the Everything for Free Party voted for the motion, with the others voting against. But it's shocking to think that cheap politics like that can win the vote of the majority of the population. So the majority of the population vote for parties that stand for theft and corruption and legalized abortion and so on too. So ANC leader Lakota, now leader of COPE, condemned these tactics as imbecilic, racist attacks, misleading our people for cheap popularity just to win votes. However, if you consider the real threat taking place in our time, you recognize that no one has stolen more from us than the government has. The greatest theft is actually from inflation, taxation, and corruption, by far. The African Union calculates 25% of the gross domestic product of Africa stolen every year by governments. That is 10 times more, or 1,000%, of all the foreign aid received in Africa every year. While they promise liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. That's 10 times the income tax payer base for the country. South Africa has been looted with a 1.3 trillion rand budget, which is primarily a feeding trough for the political elite to enrich themselves at the expense of the general population. If we could cut corruption by just 10%, it would equal all the foreign aid poured into Africa every year. Imagine if you could eradicate 50% of corruption. Imagine eradicating 90% of the corruption. We wouldn't have Eskom failing to keep the lights on if we could get rid of corruption. Here's one newspaper headline: 139 billion rand theft probe in Eskom. Since then, they've stolen a lot more than that, more like 400 billion by now. Remember when we had our so-called drought 5 years ago? They increased the water tariffs 800%, which hasn't been rescinded, even though the drought ended 5 years ago. City Water underspends 1.6 billion. Another way of putting it is they overtaxed us 1.6 billion for water in Cape Town. There are other authors who published books like The Gangster State, and this is a state run by gangsters, actually. Corruption is killing free enterprise. It's killing businesses. When I was growing up, city councillors and members of parliament were not actually paid for their service. They received only basic expenses. They needed to have real jobs to sustain themselves. When I asked my history teacher, Mr. Rhys Davies, how he could be a member of parliament and a school teacher, well, we don't get paid to be members of parliament. We need a real job as well. And at that time, he wasn't absent from school often. It was only a couple of weeks a year that parliament actually met. And he said they received free train tickets to reach Salisbury from Bulawayo. But if they wanted to fly, that was their own expense. I remember that was so in South Africa too. Members of Parliament could get a free train ticket between Cape Town and Pretoria and so on, but if they wanted to fly, that's their own cost. They weren't given free plane tickets at that stage. At that time, the kind of people who offered themselves for public service, town councillors, members of Parliament, tended to have been successful job providers in the community, able to donate their time to the city council or legislative duties. Certainly entering politics at that time was not a get-rich-quick scheme. A civil servant was actually sacrificing time and talent for the common good. And that's the kind of people you want in Parliament, not the kind who come in there with the aim to loot the system. Today, it would seem all too many in what is meant to be public service see it as an opportunity for self-serving criminals to loot public resources. So an African Union reports that a quarter of the gross domestic product of Africa is looted every year by government corruption. That means that more than a quarter of the total wealth of Africa is stolen by so-called civil servants. Not very civil and certainly not servants. 10 times more than all the foreign aid to Africa combined. Now some, like President Zuma, said corruption doesn't hurt anyone. Actually, corruption hurts absolutely everyone. It chases away the tourists, the investors, the job creators, and it devalues the currency. It reduces the value of everyone's savings, earnings, and pensions. It erodes and implodes any economy. Corruption, more than any other single cause, is responsible for poverty, power failures, and joblessness in society. Of course, most people would be deeply concerned for the economy, the lack of jobs, unemployment, inflation, and the deteriorating buying power of our rand. You just think that you used to be able to travel overseas and buy $2 for every rand you had, or have more powerful currency than the pound. That was my first experience traveling overseas. Now it's shocking. I mean, Iran can barely buy 10 cents of American money. So the economist Stephen Mitford Goodson, a good friend of the Reformation Society, who was once director of the Southern Reserve Bank for 9 years, he said the buying power of the Rand has deteriorated to 1/500th of its buying power in 1982. In other words, one Rand in 1982 could buy more than 500 Rand can today. Vandalism and arson, destroying university campuses, vehicles, buses and trains can only aggravate the situation. You know, we're not happy with service delivery, or burning the trains don't exactly help with that. Even more than that, it drives away employers, it erodes investor confidence. The massive erosion of pensions, savings and earnings over the last few decades has been catastrophic. Along with this, deforestation and destruction of so much of the environment, including laying waste to entire forests. Cape Town used to have about 10 million more trees in the Cape Peninsula than we have now since 1994. And of course, massive arson, also inspired by the ANC. I heard at their 2014 celebrations at Greenpoint Stadium, the president at the time saying, make the Cape ungovernable. And fires started immediately after that all over the Cape Peninsula. Thousands of hectares of forestry burned by their supporters. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. So the solution is free the Cape, Cape exit. We need to shed some light on the situation. We need complete decentralization. This is the judgment. The light has come into the world, but men love the darkness more than the light because their deeds are evil. Criminals love power failures because not only are the electric gates not working and electric fences, but the lights and the cameras aren't working. They love the darkness. It's easy to get away with the crimes in darkness. No wonder they engineer power failures. The night is almost done. The day is near. Therefore, let us lay aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual force of wickedness in the heavenly places. So spiritual warfare includes fighting against forces of darkness, which in this country means Eskom and ANC, or the cancer government. We will upload this presentation on frontlinemissionsa.org as soon as possible. Any questions? Any comments? Yes?
I have a question regarding the thing that the UK is planning for Monday. Do you know what is planned and what could be the effect of that? Us in
well, apparently, the mayor of Cape Town said, don't even think about it here.
Yeah.
Now, it's quite clever what they've done because Tuesday is a public holiday, so a lot of people are taking Monday off anyway. So, this enabled the Everything for Free Party to claim anyone who stays home from work on Monday is supporting them. But in fact, many would have been doing it anyway just because it's able to be turned to a long weekend. So, it's a clever timing. But it's obviously a stunt, it's a publicity gimmick, and maybe an intimidation tactic too. I would imagine some of the people looking forward to possible looting spree, rioting and so on. And of course there's many deeply concerned after what happened in July 2021 in Natal, the fear that there could be another looting spree like that, which the FFF has taken part in before. So I think they may be wanting to cause trouble. Certainly, the chance of free things by looting could be attractive to those kind of folks. And any chaos caused can embarrass the government and make it easier for the EFF in the next elections. I think the Western Cape is probably anticipating this and will try and be prepared. I'm inclined to think the real problem is going to be in KZN and Gauteng. Maybe even Limpopo. But we should always be alert. I mean, the EFF is the vanguard of the revolution. They are a deception operation. The EFF, founded by the previous leader of the ANC Youth League, Julius Malema, and they started a year after the ANC National Convention agreed to launch the second phase of transformation using terminology of the second phase of the revolution. and the KEP's being what the lead for the vanguard of the revolution. And I believe the EFF is a deception operation of the ANC, that while the people on the ground might be feeling animosity towards one another or competition, the leadership are working hand in glove. I think the EFF is the vanguard of the ANC in the second phase of the revolution, and that they're there to do the illegal things that the government can then have plausible deniability, say, well, that wasn't us. And I think the EFF's a straightforward communist vanguard of the revolution.
Just wondering, since our public officials, politicians, all these people, for 20 years, I mean, since the arms deal, provably that they're basically invincible. So wouldn't a shrewd option be to actually start paying them, like, from our own funds, businesses that want power back and businesses that want the country to run properly, to start outbribing the bribers and pay the politicians to expose who's approached them to bribe them? Because all of this is they're getting bribed. I understand they receive a few billion to shut down coal plants. That is a bribe. That should be, those people should be arrested. We can't touch them. We've got to admit it. We can't touch these guys. They're invincible. For 20 years, we've been going down the same road, how corrupt they are. What about if the public actually paid them to do their job? And then, well, because I can almost assure you, if they get bribed 4 billion, they probably only get a brand new Range Rover and a nice holiday house. Then 3 billion gets ferreted away in a secret trust fund that's still part of the global oligarchs. I don't think they're getting all that money, but it just seems to me that they're invincible. They're in a position where outside forces recognize us, and they're using them as a conduit. But if we reverse that conduit, then we're prepared to actually bribe them to do their job, essentially.
Well, we need people with very deep pockets. I mean, who has that amount of money? Only globalists at the moment.
They formed some kind of a population of fund. Because it just seems
We need to get some pretty big businesses to see that it would be better in a decentralized system. A free Western Cape wouldn't need any power failures because we could be power independent. We only have power failures because we're sharing with the national grid. They're the ones who've got inadequate electricity. We've got enough. So somehow, if we could get more businesses to see that they wouldn't have to pay as much bribes and things would be much better under a free independent Western Cape, I think that's a longer term solution. But somewhere along the line, we need to expose who's been doing all the bribing. And I'm pretty sure it's big globalists. For example, we know that the ANC government received from the European Union something in the region of $8 billion to close down our largest coal plant and repurpose it for green energy, which led to a lot of the whole shortage of energy. But what's also intriguing is vast amounts of our coal in South Africa is being exported through Richards Bay, never-ending trains and lines of trucks taking coal, and where's it going to Europe? The very people who paid us to close down our largest coal plant, which I think was Kamati, are buying our coal, which isn't needed now for South Africa, to them, because they're short of coal in Europe. So how hypocritical is that? But for the government to take a bribe from overseas to close down a working coal plant, putting us in the dock, hampering our businesses, and then the very people who bribed them to close down our coal plant are buying our coal at great amounts. The Richards Bay is apparently struggling to keep up with it, so much so that some southern coal is going through Maputo, because Richards Bay can't cope with all the coal exports right now. Yeah, there's something very sinister and dishonest double dealing going on in all this. And the EU is a key part of it. This COP26 fund that they're talking about, it's from the last climate change get-together that the UN organized, and they're trying to get South Africa to be an example to the third world of converting from coal and nuclear to what they call green energy, which is buying solar panels and batteries from China. China gets most of the money from green energy because they dominate the market when it comes to wind turbines and batteries and solar panels and so on. So green energy is helping the biggest polluter on the planet and the worst, most oppressive governments on the planet, with China. How is that helping anyone? It's not even helping the planet either, because when you look at it, even if all of us behaved ourselves in South Africa, wonderfully, in green energy, no pollution, so on, it's insignificant compared to the plastic pollution and air pollution done by Red China. And you could add India and Indonesia as well, because they're major pollutants as well. If you want to change the global CO2 emissions and so on, with plastic pollution, you've got to convince China, India and Indonesia, they're the biggest pollutants right now. And the rest of us are not contributing much to it, good or bad, in the scheme of things. But if we invest in green energy right now, alternative energy, we're actually buying into China's economy, because they're the biggest producer of wind turbines, solar panels and batteries, which are very destructive of the environment in general. So this green energy climate hoax is a major scam. But it's making some people very rich. I like the idea that somehow make a better offer to the people, or make them an offer they can't refuse. We need some people who are able to do that.
I'm sure they're not getting the billions. They're getting the millions, but they're not getting the billions, because people who are dealing with them are super shrewd. So maybe they can be out. And I don't bet money that they're not worried. That they will go, ooh, you know, and then even at that stage you could become out as a hero. You're just exposed to corruption.
Yeah, a combination of incentives and threats might work. But certainly what we need is a free and independent Cape of Good Hope. It's by the way, if it looks like we've got problems and potholes here, you go to KZN and Gauteng and the Cape looks like paradise and utopia in comparison. Yes.
I was thinking that we would basically then be being corrupt to expose corruption.
Yes.
That doesn't sound like a good idea, does it?
No,
not long term.
It's not a good idea, because otherwise they can just turn on you and just expose you immediately after.
We want to get a higher standard in the Western Cape.
Yeah.
I might say, friends of ours from other parts of the country, they come down here, they're just astounded. They say, the Cape's like another country, and we are. Mm-hmm. We need to keep it that way. Yes.
One question, in terms of this whole government and the corruption that you've exposed here, what is, in terms of the Bible perspective, in standing up to the government and sort of overthrowing the corrupt government, what are our rights in terms of the Bible say about that?
Well, the classic books are In Defense of Liberty Against Tyrants and Lex Rex being the Latin for the law is king. So the key principle the reformers taught us, as you owe allegiance to your king owes allegiance to the King of Kings. If your king is in rebellion to the King of Kings, you must not join him in his rebellion. You have a higher call. And therefore they taught the doctrine of the lesser magistrate. So, for example, if central government is in rebellion to God, provincial governments or municipal governments should be in resistance to them and seek to bring their laws in submission to God. So this justified, for example, the Parliament taking up arms against the King of England in the English Civil War, against Charles I because he was a tyrant. In the end, they executed Charles. Or the United States of America resisting King George III and British Parliament, no taxation without representation, give me liberty or give me death. And so the American War of Independence was based on that Lex Rex principle. The law is king. The king isn't the law. The king doesn't make the law. The king is under the law. And he's violating the law. So there are ways that you can resist, but the best way is to do it through the lesser magistrate. In other words, central governments in rebellion, you seek to regain municipal or provincial governments. And so that's why secession is one good legal way to break away from a tyrannical central government, as South Sudan did from Sudan, as Latvia, Lithuania and Estonia did from the Soviet Union, Croatia and Slovakia did from Yugoslavia. There's many good examples. Finland break away from the Soviet Union in 1917. So this is the way we need to go. East Timor recently broke away from Indonesia.
So you wouldn't advocate our own type of revolution?
Not to try and overthrow the central government, but to break away from them.
So you say rather go and break away. But now, what would the ANC's reaction be to a breakaway?
Well, it could be many things. One of them could be relief, because most of the opposition comes from the Western Cape. And therefore, if the Western Cape was not part of South Africa, they'd have a much bigger majority too in the rest of the country. They might think that's a solution because they're about to lose their majority. And most of that's actually in the Western Cape. So they may not all be that unhappy to see us go. For example, old Mbeki hated Cape Town. And he apparently never spent the night in Cape Town. If he had to come and give State of the Nation address, he'd fly in for the day, fly out at night, go back to Pretoria. He'd never stay in Fortescue Estate in the House of Rhodes built. He just didn't like the Cape. And, well, we didn't like him either, so that's fair enough. But I think that there is an anti-Cape attitude in the ANC. And they may try to stop us because they're getting a lot of loot out of the Cape. But right now there's no incentive for us to stay in the Union. So Britain, a while ago, gave Scotland the vote to decide whether they want to secede or not. But they were clever enough to give Scotland everything Scotland wanted. So there's no incentive for Scotland to leave. So Scotland got autonomy of their own parliament, their own flag. They even got the Stone of Scone back, the stone which is believed to be Jacob's pillar, and which is always under the throne for the coronation. So they got everything they wanted. And they were paying much less in taxes and they got benefits. So Scotland decides to stay within the United Kingdom because they're certainly benefiting far more, but they've got all the autonomy they need. They make their own laws and so on. So Scotland stayed in the Union for that reason. We've got no incentive to stay in the Union because we get in Cape Town about 8 cents for every rand we pay in taxes. Only about 8 cents gets paid, spent back in the Western Cape. Most of that's misspent for cadres and affirmative action nonsense. So why should the Cape stay? If we were independent, we could cut our taxes to 10% what they are now. In fact, less, because we'd be more efficient. So why would we stay in the Union? There's no incentive. So it's like divorce is not nice, but if there's an abusive spouse, divorce might be the only option. In this case, political divorce is the way. So Cape exit, we think, is going to solve a lot of our problems, certainly economically. So that's why you can see the Cape flag flying outside.
Okay, I think it's a good idea. Sure. I mean,
we're about to publish a book called A Case for Secession, which got examples of exodus through history and in the Bible. I mean, remember how did Israel start? Let my people go. Exodus, the big events of the Old Testament. And this was the theme, in fact, for South Sudan's independence, was also let my people go. And so this book has got the legal, practical case for secession. In fact, I cover, there's a whole lot of flanks of countries that have successfully seceded, which includes Switzerland, the United States, Texas, Norway, so many, you know, Ireland, Namibia. Namibia seceded from South Africa, and Namibia is doing better than we are right now. And the Western Cape's much, much, much bigger population and economy than Namibia. So anyway, we think we've got a strong case for trying to get this book published and distributed widely throughout the Western Cape to spread the confidence and
direction. Would you have to have a referendum, or would you
just... we've got to move for a referendum.
Okay.
So, to win the referendum, we need 1.6 million registered Cape voters to vote for secession, and we can get it. 1.6 million. Now, in 2019, there were 7,000 people signed up for Cape Exit. 7,000. Now it's 820,000 plus. So, we're halfway there to the 1.6 million we need to vote for Cape Independence. Cape Exit done a lot of work already. There are other groups as well working for Cape Independence, but CAPEX is the biggest. Now, what we need is education. The more people who hear the case, the more people be enthusiastic. I mean, who wants to go the way of the rest of the country? Who wants to let this continue? So I think the more people in Cape understand the feasibility, the economics of it, how it can work practically, legalities and so on, the more would be enthusiastic. So this book that we've got it ready for print. We just need the sponsors to get it through the printer. And I believe this book's going to really help. We've made films. We've got a Cape of Good Hope website, and which has got a lot of good resources on it to encourage people. We've given presentations at previous Reformation societies on how to reclaim our municipalities and different aspects for secession, the Bible, secession history, practically, and so on. And I think when people know the case, they'll be very enthusiastic. I've seen some secessions work from Croatia, Slovakia, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, South Sudan. I worked for a lot. So I've seen successful secessions. I know it can work. I believe the Cape's got a better foundation and case and economy than most of these other countries ever had.
So yes. What happens about power grid? Because we are integrated with the grid, so how do we...
We'd have to, at some substations, cut the network from the rest of the country. But we've got everything we need internally.
Yeah.
You think Kuburg and Stellenbosch Rivier hydroelectric... I don't know, because they do need to do 6 months refurbishment.
They're busy with that now.
Yeah. That's been long overdue. It's a 40-year-old plant, so it's overdue for overhaul. But nuclear energy is the cleanest, safest, long-term, if it's handled well. And cheap, of course, too.
And also there's a nuclear aircraft carrier that generates its own jet fuel through
its immense power and the nuclear plant and seawater. See. So that will put to bed the ideas that we need to stop,
that we need to pay more for fuel and enormous costs of fuel.
I must get Professor Wolfram Reiner here one night. He's got ocean energy. He's been investing in how to turn ocean currents, winds and waves into energy, just like the hydroelectric plants. He believes around the coast of Cape Town, we can get all the energy from the ocean that we need. And there's some very impressive studies there. You just think what you could get from something like Victoria Falls, or we can get more than that from the Cape of Good Hope. That's just around the coast.
Orange River currently, yeah, a couple of weeks ago, actually. So what's it called?
Hendrik Verwoerd. Hendrik
Verwoerd. No, it's one of the falls.
Yeah. Ah, yes, I know which one you mean.
So we power coming down there.
Tremendous. Yeah. So in Angola, we had Ruacana, and it was used to power the whole of Southwest Africa. That was an amazing, just not even a very big waterfall, but it was sufficient for all of Namibia.
And that's another option also for our power problem. And solve our water shortage potentially.
Just building a nice hydroelectric good, but the idea of utilizing the ocean, we've got all these ocean currents and storms going past here. That's both wind and wave power. Can you imagine harnessing that? So that's some of the waves of the future. I'm told that you can also take these what are these sort of parasites? There's a whole lot of these parasites that can also use that will produce more energy than you even get from petrol.
Also, another question that I have about the 1929 crash in America. Mm-hmm. I saw another documentary that was showing the enormous uprising, and the way it's presented to us was that the average American was just powerless. Do you think that's an attempt for them to show that the public have never risen up and threatened the establishment? There were huge protests in New York, and it was multiracial.
And it was crushed by the military.
It was crushed by the
FDR staged the 50-year revolution. He brought in huge amounts of socialism into America. They put millions of farmers out of work during the Depression. Depression was a catastrophe. Of course, in many ways, it led to the Second World War. But to understand what caused it, Stephen Mitford Goetz, in his book, A History of Central Banking and Enslavement of Mankind, he shows how this American Reserve Bank deliberately caused the Great Depression to lead to a massive transfer of wealth from the farming rural areas to the urban, and to give better control for them over the whole population. It was a deliberate plan. Yeah, and I mean, these banks are the enemies of civilization, so to say.
I've heard that banking system is basically a
Ponzi scheme. It is. Well, they create money out of nothing. They charge you interest in loaning it. So the way Stephen Goodson describes it is, government comes along to the Reserve Bank and says, we need to borrow money. Well, no problem, that's what they exist for. They create, let's say, R1 billion out of nothing, just a blip on a computer screen. They sort of give you a check for R1 million. Now, the R1 million they've given you is ex nihilo, it's created out of nothing. But the interest they charge you every year to pay it back, that's very real. Britain is still paying back its First World War debt to the Rothschild Bank of England. Still, 100 years later, how is it possible? In fact, they owe more now than they owed back in 1914.
Compound.
It's compound interest. The Bible forbids usury, charging of interest. And Magna Carta, England's great charter of liberties, most of its emphasis was forbidding usury. Bankers charging interest was the biggest target of Magna Carta, the great charter. So when banks can charge interest to taxpayers for the loans they give governments, that's what forced everyone into such oppression. So Stephen Goodson pointed out that the great cathedrals in Europe stand as testimonies to a time when the bankers were banned from Europe, and usury was illegal, and people only worked about 140 days of the year, the rest of the year, 220 days of the year they had as holidays, effectively. And people were using their spare time to build the great cathedrals to the honor of God. He said the cathedrals are a great testimony to a time when you didn't have usury in banks, and therefore you had much less tax and people had a lot more free time. That's a very interesting point. So
we're reading the Bible that say that usury is forbidden.
We can give you quite a few pastors. Thanks for the challenge. I'll get those together. I know Stephen Goodson's pointed out quite a lot in his books, but Magna Carta does too. Charging of interest is forbidden.
Einstein was asked, what's the most powerful equation in the world? And everybody was expecting him to talk about E equals MC squared. And he gave the equation for compound interest and said that's the most powerful equation in the world.
Yeah.
Which is true because it's created this powerful empire and rules of
I mean, basically, they get paid by taxpayers for doing nothing. So the banks don't add any value to society, but the benefit of everyone else's work. Blood, sweat, and tears.
The Bible says every man shall work by the sweat of his brow. So how do they get to bypass that?
They think they're above it. It doesn't apply to them. The filthy goyim can do the sweating and working.
They live and born and die.
They think they're above hard work. I mean, our Lord Jesus took up the hammer, the saw, and the plane. He worked harder as a carpenter, giving us an example.
Yeah.
But these bankers have another idea. Let everyone else work hard. We'll just take percentage. Thank you. It's very dishonest. So, this is a good time to speak to people about Cape Secession independence, because let's face it, everyone's fed up with Eskom. But to remind people, Eskom is a result of BBBEE, affirmative action, and corruption. For example, they kicked out something like 14,000 white engineers out of Eskom. And then, what do you think is going to happen? You kick out the qualified engineers with experience, and you bring in a bunch of communist cadres, and what's going to happen? I mean, what could possibly go wrong? Race-based politics and a corrupt communist elite running it. So why are we in power failures? Well, we've got a government which has tremendous darkness in their hearts, full of hatred. And I mean, as the Bible says, if you hate your brother, there's no light in you. And when we talk about the powers of darkness right now, I think we can have a lot of stepping stones to your conversations. Just the power failures alone. When people say load shedding, it's good to point out then, load shedding is a euphemism for power failure. It's a failure of government. And it's a scheduled power failure, but load shedding suggests I've got so much I'm giving away free. Load shedding. It's not load shedding, it's a power failure. So just to use the right words and not the euphemism of government, that already is a good move. But then say to people, what's the solution? Well, of course, one solution is get rid of the ANC. Another solution is to keep breaking away from the ANC, building a free, decentralized country in the Western Cape, a Cape of Good Hope. So I think this is a good talking point. Everyone's got to be thinking about it because power failures have wrecked all of our lives, undermining businesses, bankrupting people. It's not just inconvenient. In some cases, it's suicidal. Because no business can survive now without their own independent electricity, which is what government's meant to be providing. If they can't keep the lights on, what are they doing there? What are we paying taxes for? They're a complete failure. They can't protect us. We've got to get our own independent security companies. We need our own independent power. We've got to get our own solar panels, batteries, UPSs and generators. So what do we need the government for? They're good for nothing. And that's a message that needs to get out.